Of course, this could just as easily have been explained by the environments of those families, that environmentally favored families produce environmentally favored offspring. But that's just not the way Galton, Darwin's cousin, saw it. He saw it rather that this showed that there was an inheritance, goodness and inherited badness running through these families. He was blatant about it. He linked intelligence, beauty, and health with ability. So intelligence would show ability, beauty would show ability, health would ability, and they'd all be together. Ignorance, ugliness, and sickness he connected with inability. In fact, he once published in a popular British journal a beauty map of England, where the most beautiful women of England are found so that males seeking a eugenic mate would know where to go, I suppose, to pick up the most beautiful mate, who would therefore also be the most intelligent and most able, the most eugenically fit. In 1883, Galton actually coined the term eugenics. He'd been writing about it for about a decade before that, to designate policies and programs designed to encourage more children from the fit and less children from the unfit. Well, eugenics was sort of a cult idea for half a generation, but it gained widespread interest after the 1900 rediscovery of Mendelian genetics made it all seem more credible. Certainly there were followers before that, but it was Mendelian genetics that, when combined with evolutionary thought, made it pop over the top as accepted social policy. Genetics appeared to offer a physical basis for Galton's theories. Many experts saw such traits as mental illness, mental retardation, epilepsy, gross physical defects, and criminality as the products of easily eliminated, simple hereditary factors, much like tall pea plants and short pea plants, criminals, non-criminals. If you want tall pea plants, you pick the tall pea plant as the parents. If you want to get rid of criminals, just get rid of the gene that causes criminality. Widespread thought at the time. This, of course, was a time when science was held in high esteem, when biology was coming to its own, when genetics seemed to offer new solutions, and here eugenics appeared to offer a scientific methodology for the social sciences. Nature all but replaced nurture within social scientific thinking. The IQ was invented at this time as an objective measure of intelligence. Before that, people thought there were people, I suppose, who were smarter and people who were not as smart, but they wanted to quantify this for using in eugenics. And they came up with the idea that you could quantify intelligence through IQ and have an IQ test. And the IQ test was actually brought to America to be used to differentiate people by eugenicists who wanted to use that to sort of categorize people and decide who should be encouraged to breed and who should be discouraged from breeding. Sociologists at this time conducted public health surveys and compiled family pedigrees to show a hereditary basis for crime, poverty, antisocial behavior, and low IQ. And since they went looking for that, they found plenty of survey evidence because of who they picked and how they picked that seemed to support their ideas. Although eugenics really never gained broad popular appeal among the masses in America, as it were, many scientific, professional, and philanthropic organizations promoted its acceptance actively. And these efforts greatly influenced public policies throughout the United States and Europe during the first quarter, maybe the first third of the 20th century. Now, they basically formed into two types. There was a variety of public policies and programs that would go into the rubric positive eugenics. These theories and these approaches sought more children from the fit.